Now, Dr. Joan Kenley, psychologist and author of Whose Body Is It Anyway, brings you Conversation Radio on Green 960 KKGN every Saturday at 5 o'clock.
Hello, everyone. I'm Joan Kenley, welcoming you to The Joan Kenley Show, bringing you Conversation Radio, a program where talking really matters. Today, we're talking about everything musical for your mind, body, heart, and soul. And there are so many lovely things said about music. Music is the poetry of the air. Without music, life would be a mistake. There is nothing in the world so much like prayer as music. Music is the wine that fills the cup of silence. Music is what feelings sound like. Music is the universal language of mankind and womankind. Well, since the dawn of time, people have recognized the power of music physically, emotionally, spiritually. Particular sounds, tones, and rhythms can strengthen the mind, unlock the creative spirit, and even heal the body. There are dramatic accounts of how doctors, shamans, musicians, and healthcare professionals use music to deal with everything from anxiety to cancer to high blood pressure to chronic pain and even mental illness. Music is also known as a universal language that transcends culture and even religious differences. So in this hour, we'll be exploring this very special art form. We'll look at how different types of music and rhythm affect our moods, our emotions, our physical energy, why drumming is being used in Fortune 500 companies, how music can be an important part of life transitions and celebrations, from birth to death and everything in between. What makes music such a tool for healing individually and globally is another subject, and we have so many more. We're delighted today to be joined by two extraordinary guests whose life work is devoted to using music to transform people's lives. We're so pleased to have Gary Mulkin and Marianne Hubler. Gary is an award-winning composer, producer, and arts activist, and the founder of Wisdom of the World, a life-enhancing media production company. His most recent work, Graceful Passages, A Companion for Living and Dying, is used throughout the world as a support tool for life transitions. Gary is dedicated to making a difference in the world by creating music, media, and events that inspire the heart and catalyze social healing. Marianne Hubler is a concert producer for Bread and Roses, where she organizes free live entertainment for people confined in San Francisco Bay Area institutions. For more than a decade, she has promoted the Bread and Roses mission of bringing the healing power of music to people living in isolation. Marianne is also a singer and a writer and has over 25 years' experience in cultural programming, public relations, and special event management. So, welcome to both of you. And Gary, I'd like to start with you. How did your relationship with music begin, and how has it evolved as you've moved through your life? I know that's a big hunk of a question, but I know you have a very interesting journey.
It's great to be here.
Thank you.
So, I think one day my mother found me playing a friend's piano with both hands, playing music that I was hearing out in the air on the radio. And my mother's friend said, I didn't know he was studying piano.
And how old were you?
I was five.
Whoa.
And I could play both right and left hand.
Amazing.
Instantly. And my mother was completely shocked. And what was great about it was it developed the composer in me, because I had no patience to learn music by reading in classical ways.
Well, that was a gift then.
It was a gift and a curse at the same time, because things that come that easy are also, then you have an issue with process.
And that's so true.
I buckled down at 11 years old.
Oh, I'm so glad.
And I had 6 years of a lot of invention and time to play. And so within months, I was playing in a way that was really soothing. Mm. And I lived in this, warm and close, but very dysfunctional New York Jewish family. And the moment the fighting started, I would gravitate towards the piano, because I had an outlet to soothe myself.
Absolutely.
And like the mouse with the cheese, I noticed within minutes the fighting stopped faster than when I played the piano. And I textbook 101, what happens when music enters an environment.
Exactly.
And I understood that, my God, I didn't consciously know it, but I knew something was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, it just gave me an instant world that I had all my own. And then, you know, another significant moment that really helped me define what I wanted to do was I was homesick one day. I was 10 or 11 years old, and I was watching The Miracle Worker with Helen Keller and Anne Bancroft.
And Larry Rosenthal.
Well, I was going to bring it up.
So composed the music.
Exactly.
And well, he's been on our show.
Yeah, one of the Bay Area treasures, Larry Rosenthal, is one of the great composers of film.
Without question.
He created one of the most remarkable scores for that movie.
He did.
Well, here I am, 11 years old, and the scene where the water is pouring out of Annie Bancroft's teaching sign language to Helen Keller. And I started to sob. And then as I was crying, I think it was the first time I ever cried for someone else's suffering other than my own, being so young. And I went, I'm crying because of the music.
Exactly.
And I knew it then at 11 years old. And I went, I want to be a film composer. That's when it happened. Larry was, I've told Larry that he's the reason I wanted to be a film composer.
That's so inspiring. And he is a king among composers for sure.
He really is.
And
yeah.
You are his prince, I'm sure.
Well, I've told him. I thank him. You can't thank him enough for that.
And so you evolved, though, from film and television composing into other tributaries as well.
Yeah. So I fell in love with the art of emotional manipulation and developing an intimacy with harmonic language as it relates to the psychology of people. Now, I never used that language before.
Right.
I intuitively just went for what made me feel right when there was alchemy with music and visuals. Mm-hmm. And what created the alchemical response that was desired for whether it was a commercial, TV show, a film, whatever. And what I noticed was the only times over a very broad and successful career that I felt like I was doing what I came here to do happened like 4 or 5 times a year when I was doing these socially responsible documentaries or the United Way campaign or the Leukemia Foundation and something where I wasn't getting paid any money. I'd go home at night and it was a slam dunk. You know, I did this incredible piece for a good cause and I went to bed at night and I went, this is what makes me, I mean, some way of really making a difference.
Well, that harmonic is unbeatable. And it's like anything else in life, until you experience it, you don't know it.
Yeah.
And when it comes, it's irrefutable, isn't it?
It's really true. And so the defining moment, which was this moment of being asked to write music for a nuclear film. And a film that was against nuclear energy. And I was very young. I was early in my career. And 1981, I was like, what is that? I was 28. And I was asked in a very despairing film to create the last 5 minutes of hope when there wasn't really much evidence for reasons for hope.
Sure.
And I was at Lincoln Center. It was the opening night of the New York Film Festival in 1981. And I was early in my career, but it was a big deal for me. I mean, that was like a really... And there I was in the back of standing room only, and I saw the air thick with people not breathing because of the intensity of how in peacetime nuclear energy was killing people or causing great higher cancer rates. And then this music came in that they asked me to create that was hopeful. And I swear to God, the air lifted, people breathed, and I suddenly felt hope in the air. And that was, for me, the epiphany. And I said, oh my God, we're dealing with something so much more powerful than we have any idea. And I think now, after having devoted my life to music and healing in both individual and social realms, we've only scratched the surface of what we understand.
We've only scratched the surface.
Yeah.
We are pioneers today of how we can unify the planet with music and with importance of consciousness about what the music can do. So I want to ask you, Marian, the very same question, because we'll get into more of Gary's work and more of your work, but I want your journey to be part of what we're talking about now as well. And what was your beginning?
Thank you so much, Joan. Well, my parents always had music in the house, and they bought ukuleles for my brother and I when we were 4 and 5 years old and started entering us in talent contests. And my parents had 4 children in 5 years, a good Catholic family. And they always trotted us out to sing at every dinner party they ever had, sort of like the Trapp family singers from The Sound of Music. And so I grew up harmonizing with my brothers and sisters, and we're still very close to this day because of music. So music has been an important part of my life since I was a very young child, and I love to sing and personally believe in the power of harmony. And I think that's really what led me in part to Bread and Roses when I met Mimi Farinha on Alcatraz when they were doing the benefit concerts in the Cell House on Alcatraz Island in the mid-90s. The mission of Bread and Roses to bring music to people and institutions really resonated with me, and I was also inspired how Mimi had dedicated her life work to founding and keeping Bread and Roses going. So that's been my continuous thread for many, many years through many life transitions.
And I know that the work of Bread and Roses is famous in the Bay Area, and I'm not sure that any other community in the country has something that has gone on for so long with so much energy. I know when we were talking earlier, you said there are 350 artists that you use to book into the many hospitals and institutions and prisons where you perform, and it is like a chess game of, and it is also a community that comes together to not only make music, but to help people connect with the idea of being in the field together in a healing kind of way.
Yes, Joan, that's right. This is our 31st year of doing this work in the Bay Area. And there are some other offshoots or similar kinds of organizations in other parts of the country. And we try to help other people who ask us questions and need some consulting to get started. But we have been doing the same work with the same mission for 31 years in the Bay Area with this wonderful pool of volunteer performers and many other volunteers as well.
How did Bread and Roses get named Bread and Roses? I have wondered this forever.
Well, Mimi was inspired by a poem written by James Oppenheim in 1912 called Bread and Roses. I'll sing a little bit of it just extemporaneously here. As we go marching, marching in the beauty of the day, a million darkened kitchens, a thousand mill-lost gray, are touched with all the radiance that a sudden sun discloses. For the people hear us singing, bread and roses, bread and roses. So it's the art, it's the beauty, it's the roses that we need as much as the bread. So I believe that was what inspired Mimi to choose this particular poem, which she set to music for the name of Bread and Roses.
I love hearing how the Bread and Roses name came into being, and we must say that music expresses feeling and thought without language, and it's below and before speech, if you want to think about it that way, and it's above and beyond all words when we want to just let it seep into our cells. And so from the crib to the grave, music is imbued in every part of our life at every age. When we come back from the break, we'll dive right into this with Gary and Marion, so stay tuned and keep listening.
Ready for more? Dr. Joan Kenley continues in a moment on Green 960 KKGN. Log on to joankenley.com, that's K-E-N-L-E-Y, to learn more and listen to archive shows. What's not to love about the Joan Kenley Show? Where talking truly matters, here on 960 KKGN.
Hello, I'm Joan Kenley, and you're listening to The Joan Kenley Show. We're focusing today on everything musical. I love what Oliver Wendell Holmes had to say. Take a music bath once or twice a week for a few seasons. You will find it is to the soul what a water bath is to the body. Oh, that sounds pretty soothing, doesn't it? Let's all take a music bath. Right now, however, we're going to look at the healing part of the music equation, both personally and socially. Our musically savvy guests will be adding terrific insights to the conversation. Gary Mulkin is an award-winning composer and producer, and he serves as the artistic director for the Quest for Global Healing Conferences. Marion Hubler is a vocalist and songwriter, and she works for Bread and Roses, where she organizes live quality performances for people confined in San Francisco Bay Area institutions. So, first of all, Marion, I'd like for you to talk about how music affects the social aspects in the work that you're doing with Bread and Roses.
I'm thinking about when we bring music into juvenile detention facilities, for instance, and those are among our most challenging audiences to present cultural programming. A lot of the youth perhaps have not been exposed to the wide range of the performing arts that all of us are so privileged to be a witness and transformed by. But it's such a wonderful thing when we're able to find multi-ethnic, positive music, live music to present for teens, and you can watch in the course of an hour how youth who are really struggling, just sort of staying in their seats and paying attention, become part of this greater community audience. And to witness the transformation in the course of a show is, it's really an amazing thing.
What I love about this conversation is, you know, we're looking at the power of music as a way to bring to the fore, to our conscious awareness, the best of what it means to be human.
There you go.
And a lot of what happens in our culture is, you know, somebody once told me that all of the violent acts that happen, 90% of them can be attributed to unprocessed grief. Mm. And so on another level, on some level, the ability to sustain the amount of little deaths and traumas that all of us have sustained in order to be alive, there are little parts of ourselves that are like deers in the headlight that we would never even acknowledge is so, but they're frozen. And something about music and the nonlinear arts has a way of bringing to the surface our awareness of our hearts and our spirits, our minds, and in an integrated way, and it changes the way we see everything. And I'll give you an example. My former partner, Michael Stillwater, who co-created Graceful Passages, the audiobook that we created for supporting people through the little and big deaths of life. It's not just for people facing the final transition. Where it started was very much inspired by the magic that happens at a Bread and Roses experience. He would go at the bedside of people that were dying, right? And there were family members around, and everyone was a deer in the headlight. Everyone. Mm. The denial that the person was dying, the goodbye,
sure.
The transgression that never got forgiven, the love that wanted to be said, but no one ever said, I love you. All these frozen expressions. And he'd come in and he'd create these intuitive songs of healing that were purely channeled in the moment to what was happening in the room. And within minutes, people were tearing,
hugging,
crying, saying I'm sorry, apologizing for the thing that happened 30 years ago,
sure.
For expressing forgiveness, saying their goodbyes, and it transformed the space. And that's when he saw this on an ongoing basis, he called me and he said, it was very complimentary and it's very sweet. He said, "When if I die, the person's music who I want to hear is yours.
Oh.
How about if we create something that doesn't require our physical presence?" But there's nothing like the live experience because it's an authentic experience of integrated human experience.
A couple days ago, I got a call from a mother of a patient at the California Pacific Medical Center. We had brought a show there in December. And our performer's program meant so much to this young man who died a week ago that she called wanting this performer to come and sing at the memorial and said it was one of the most important things in the latter part of his life. So I definitely know what you're saying.
And the way that people actually feel healing, not just emotional healing, but physical healing sometimes, that shamans have used music in the past to heal people in primitive cultures because there was no, in quotes, medicine with a capital M. And when we look at the fact that we are healing our soul sometimes and healing our emotions with meditative music, with music that quiets our inner being, when we actually take moments to say music can transfer sadness into a more positive emotion, or the grieving, or the isolation. Because the minute we connect at a heart level from the music, we're no longer alone. We are with being with in a way that changes our chemistry in our body. It changes the cells inside.
It's so true. And the science is in. It's completely archaic now to believe that it's frivolous or an adornment to life. To think that the fastest growing field in medicine is music therapy, and that's a particular branch, there's music practitioners, there's music therapy, and there's what I'm doing, which is combining spoken word and music in a unique way that's as a healing modality. But in all cases, these are examples of scientific proof, proven ways in which pain can get alleviated, soul healing can happen. There's tons of science in now that supports the justification for use of these modalities.
And I was wondering the other day as we were planning for this show about the different kinds of music that go with occasions. For instance, there is music that is patriotic, that makes our collective national pride soar, and they use these in political campaigns, and you wouldn't use those at a funeral, for instance. And when you think of music for weddings or love songs, music has a way of fitting the circumstance. And classical music has a whole way of activating us in ways that, for instance, rock and roll doesn't, but rock and roll does something else. And I remember when Elvis Presley came into prominence, it was scandalous to talk about Elvis Presley. And of course, now he's not scandalous at all. He's one of the icons of the musical business, and we're hoping that he hasn't left the building. So, you know, we are so very connected worldwide with what types of music do what types of things, aren't we?
Well, and, you know, I've done a whole career of music for film, television, and commercials, and that, you know, the marketing business has figured out ways to manipulate people so that they'll buy things.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, try to go to a movie without any music in it. And it basically, what it does is it tells you what to feel. So, you know, you can use that for good, or you can use that for ill.
And well, when Clooney did the Edward R. Murrow movie and there was no music, it was a very interesting step away from the usual genre.
That's right.
But what they had to do was show how the spoken word was used and misused. And so that was probably a very smart choice on their part.
Well, what they showed was, that was really interesting, as I'm a major movie fan, was that they were very focused about people's delivery, and the acting was what delivered the emotional experience.
Right.
We spend a lot of time with the musical matchmaking at Bread and Roses, and we're bringing music to seniors, for instance. We bring a lot of jazz artists because they know all of the vintage songs, and you can be presenting music to someone who has Alzheimer's, and they might not be able to converse with you, but they hear the lyrics to a jazz tune, and they'll remember all the lyrics. So it's very important matching the right kind of music for the right kind of environment.
Exactly. And you're expert at doing that. And it seems like we're all thinking about where music fits in the tiny little moments of each person's life, personally or socially.
The soundtracks of our lives.
That's it. That's it. I love that. And a Frenchman once said that musical compositions do not inhabit certain countries or certain museums like paintings or statues. The Mozart Quintet is not shut up in Salzburg. He said, I have it in my pocket. Well, even in silence, we do have music in our minds, hearts, souls, and pockets. And we carry it with us as the music of our lives. Even if we're in a room with other people talking in conversation, we still have our inner music. And so how can we bring music more into the center of our daily lives for joy, for celebration, for social awareness, or sustainability? You won't want to miss this part of our conversation with Gary and Marion and Shari. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
There's more in a moment with Dr. Joan Kenley, psychologist and author of Whose Body Is It Anyway?, brings you Conversation Radio on Green 960 KKGN every Saturday at 5 o'clock. Now, Dr. Joan Kenley, psychologist and author of Whose Body Is It Anyway?, brings you Conversation Radio on Green 960 KKGN every Saturday at 5.
Hello, I'm Joan Kenley, and you're back with The Joan Kenley Show, where we're talking about everything musical. It's been said that we all have our own particular sorrows, loves, delights, yearnings, hope, and so much more that's beyond language when it comes to feelings. Feelings that belong to all of us in all times and in all places and in all cultures. But music is the only way we can unite our emotions universally. We have musically gifted guests with us today whose focus is using music in their own special way to bring about social and personal change and healing at every level. Marion Hubler is here, and she performs as a vocalist and songwriter throughout the Bay Area and has been involved as a producer and public relations liaison for Bread and Roses for many years. Gary Malkin is an internationally acclaimed musician who believes that music is an essential tool for individual and global healing. He founded Wisdom of the World, which is a life-enhancing media production company. In this segment, we'll also be joined by my talented program producer, Shari Berger, who is a musician and music educator, having worked with students as young as age 2, adults with disabilities, and in many other musical venues. She believes that drumming and rhythm play a key part in developing our sense of self and connecting to others. Well, as we look at music at the different stages of life, I'd like to start at the very beginning because, as we know, that's a very good place to start. Some years ago, Mickey Hart, one of the drummers of the Grateful Dead, worked with percussionists from many cultures and led drumming circles worldwide. So when his first baby was still unborn, he had a unique idea. He recorded the sound of the baby's heartbeat while the fetus was in the womb, and then used this rhythm to compose what he called Music to be Born By. He played this composition during his baby's birthing process, believing it would offer the mother and baby an enhanced experience. And the rest is history. It has since been happily used by thousands of mothers around the world. So in the womb and the first months of life, how is music and rhythm so intrinsic to starting out as we begin our life journey? What would you say about that, Marion?
Well, music, I think, from very early age is something that connects a baby to his parents, his surroundings. I have seen through my work at Bread and Roses how music has the power to draw into a communal audience very young babies in the pediatric wards of hospitals to very old seniors who are close to the end of their lives, and it has this amazing transformative ability to create a communal atmosphere that really transcends, I think, age and gender and in some cases culture as well.
What comes to mind in response to this is a story that I've heard about indigenous people in Africa, some tribe, with that when someone's pregnant, they actually developed a song that was unique to this child in utero, and they sang the song for the full pregnancy. And so whenever the child got off course as it was going through its life, the village would then circle the child and sing that song to remind them to come back to who they really are. And I love that story because I think that metaphorically it speaks to there's a certain vibrational home that we're at our highest. And music has a way of concretizing that in a certain way. And the indigenous people really know that, like, singing, for example, is the most bonding and connecting thing you can do with mother and child, with family and village and child.
Without question. And when I was working with clients who were pregnant and we were working on the speaking voice, making sounds, not necessarily musical sounds, but sounds like, oh, ah, and using the whole body to make the sound, interestingly enough, when the children were born, they knew me. They knew my sound, and of course I spoke to the clients as they were pregnant too, but there was a knowing beyond just meeting me, and I felt very connected to these babies. And so it is interesting how communication, non-verbally even, and verbally in this sense, was a musical, rhythmic, vibrational connector piece to that being and to my being as well. It was very mutual. And Shari, you've had some experiences too.
I have. I was actually thinking about my brother and his wife when my nephew was in the womb, and how they used to put these sort of headphones on her stomach and play certain types of music to him that would help sort of calm when she was having different types of pain and then going through contraction. And after he was born, he went through some medical problems actually for the first couple years of his life. And this was music that they were then able to bring back and play as a way of really calming him when he was in the hospital. And it was just amazing how his psyche recognized this as being a really safe place from his memories of being in the womb and having that be some of his early brain synapses of what music meant to him.
And also, you've talked about two-year-olds who respond to drumming, for instance, that the beat and the percussive nature. I think when we were talking about the show, you mentioned that little kids like to make noise, and banging on a drum seems pretty intrinsic to what they have in mind.
As far back as I can remember, I really like to bang on things. I like to make noise. It was a form of self-expression, and it was very exciting to me. As I got older and made the choice to become a music educator, what I started to see around me was the approach that many people were taking with little kids in music education often came from a particular perspective of classical training and getting them on an instrument as soon as possible. And they seemed to have skipped over a very important phase of self-expression. So I would go in and work with toddlers in preschools, and the first thing we would do is hand them instruments that were percussive instruments and let them just bang and make noise. And sometimes this was really the first time that they had a chance to do this in a very sanctioned way. And to see them light up and to see them start to express themselves was just the foundation. And from there, we were able to take it to using basic counting, one, two, one, two, to teaching them rhythm and teaching them how to move their body and their hands and coordination and counting. And from this foundation, we were able to build on so many different skills, whether it was interpersonal skills of how to relate in a group, self-expression through improvisation, how to subdivide a beat, which then starts to teach a child fractions. And this isn't something you're teaching them on a chalkboard. It's something that they're having very experiential. And they can start to learn these things very young because of the way it affects their body, the way they're able to intuitively feel what it is we're trying to teach.
Well, when you think about it, creating a musical environment is a form of a word that they use in psychoacoustic and music therapy is a form of entrainment. And, you know, whether it's tribes in a village creating rhythm together or it's two-year-olds creating rhythm that have this direct experience of sound, the reptilian brain is the part of our brains that process sound and music. And there we are hardwired to respond to the language of an environment of music and rhythm. We're a species that I would say that live on it. We hunger for it. The Angelus Arian, the famous cultural anthropologist, said that cultures, indigenous cultures, can't imagine days without singing the way we can't imagine days without drinking and breathing.
Well, exactly the point. I mean, it's been said that music rots when it gets too far from dance. And I love that phrase. And they also say that poetry atrophies when it gets too far from music. So we want to put music more in the center of consciousness as we understand it and appreciate it and glory in it, don't you think?
I'd say one more thing about this, and in response to what you just said, is that I think that because of its primal form of nourishment, I think that one of the problems with it is that it has become so ubiquitous and so much a part of people's lives that people actually don't understand how to use it intentionally for their lives.
Oh, thank you for saying that, because there's this mindless listening
right. In
elevators and down hallways and businesses and so forth, where people are tuned in, but they're tuned out at the same time.
Exactly.
And this is where it's a really good therapy for people sometimes to take the time to just purposefully sit down and listen to music. In fact, Shari was telling me the other day that that was one of her assignments, listening to music for 15 minutes.
That's
and
right.
Nothing
when,
else.
When I was studying sound and recording arts, one of the very early assignments that one of our professors, Frank Doherty, gave to us was to sit down every day for a minimum of 10 minutes and to actively listen. Because he was asking us questions, and many of us were trained musicians, and he was asking us questions that we could not answer. And a lot of it was because there was so much we took for granted and so much music. Like we said, driving in a car, we have our music on. We're always multitasking when we're listening to music, even as musicians. And so to give it our undivided attention, something Gary and I were talking about before, it allows you to bring a part of your present being into the room, which then opens up doors and windows for everything in your life. It really can be a form of meditation.
We see this frequently in Bread and Roses, and the power of live music in particular is something that connects people in a very special way, and we're very fortunate when we present our programs to our audiences and facilities. The environments are very intimate, and there's a very strong and powerful connection between the performer and everyone in the audience because of the nature of the live music, which inspires and creates a container for this greater presence that you're speaking of.
Live music cannot be replaced by anything else. It's a happening, it's in the moment, and it makes your heart soar. And we'll talk more about that as we continue into the next segment. We've just begun to touch on how music can be part of life transitions, even as we move toward the last stages of our life, and we'll want to get into that in the next segment. And we want to think of music, too, as medicine for the mind, body, heart, and soul. And can you really be healed by music? And what energizes you in music? And how do you use it consciously? And what if you were in a drumming circle with your coworkers? How would that affect your day? So keep listening. We'll keep talking.
Dr. Joan Kenley, taking talk radio to the next level on Green 960 AM, KKGN. You found it, and it's different. The Joan Kenley Show, right here on Green 960 AM, KKGN.
Hello, I'm Joan Kenley, and you're listening to The Joan Kenley Show. We're talking today about everything musical. Nietzsche once said, without music, life would be a mistake. Well, here in America, in some places, funding for music and the arts has been dwindling in recent years, but in other cultures, music is still honored as a central part of life. So right now, we're going to talk about bringing music out of the periphery and into the center of life and its importance for all of us to recognize. We're so pleased to have our talented and inspiring guests with us today, Gary Malkin, Marion Hubler, and Shari Berger. I have to say that over the years, I have traveled to many cities around the world. But when I visited Prague in 1994, I was truly amazed by how much music was there every hour of the day all around the city. It was thrilling, like a feast of music around every corner. It was unforgettable, but it made me wonder about that culture and their history and what created these daily multiple musical events that I didn't see anywhere else in the world. And I wondered if you ever thought about that, Gary, if you thought how Prague is different from most cities where music isn't so intrinsic and part of every street corner.
I love that you're bringing that up because I was in Prague and saw that, and it was extraordinary, an opera in so many different theaters and live chamber music everywhere.
Chorales, everything.
And you know, you really want to look. I mean, I love the cultural history of like what would have created that as a cultural value. The other culture that I find extraordinary is Bali in that way.
Because
Bali is, I would say, one of the most integrated cultures with regards to the arts and spirituality. And so that's why we had these global healing conferences there with Desmond
Tutu. Which we've talked about on this show.
Exactly, yeah, with Marsha Jaffe and becoming the Bali Institute for World Renewal, which will be coming up in the summer. But when I was there, I got to see what it's like and how healing it is to have music be such an integral part. And for example, during this conference, when my job was to integrate the arts into the plenary conferences of Desmond Tutu and other Nobel laureates and all this. And in an uncharacteristic commitment of the arts being a reflection of the best that humans have to offer, the conference allowed me to integrate it at certain points. And we used this prayer of Thich Nhat Hanh about the end of suffering in the world. And we had a choreographed dancer create this opening invocation of healing the world. And that's what the way the opening conference began, was setting the intention. And music, whether it's for a global event, a peace concert, or for an end-of-life transition, it's like a rudder that points our attention. It can support us to bring all of us to a particular issue at hand, whether it's the end of life, it's a peace concert, it's a unity in a corporation. All these things has a way of bringing us together so that the best of us can show up.
Exactly, like in a conference that you went to, it was like everybody's heart was beating to the same rhythm.
Exactly, right, yeah.
And then you're all on the same page. You have the same dreams, the same vision, the same hopes, and the same intention for life and the planet.
It's true.
I was lucky enough to be in Prague as well several years ago, and I remember the classical music in the churches and the wonderful puppet theaters.
Yes.
And I think all of us who live in the Bay Area are very lucky as well, because there are so many talented, creative, and performing artists here of many different kinds of genres of music and also performing arts. And at Bread and Roses, we have choirs of children, we have performers in their 80s, and all of them are absolutely essential to having a successful program in the many places that we visit, and bring their very special gifts of healing, depending on what their music or their art happens to be.
It's almost like a strategy or an intervention. It's like you match up. Mm-hmm. It must be fascinating to have your job where you figure out who will be the medicine that will heal this community today. You know?
That's a very good insight, yeah. Gary, and we do spend a lot of time doing that.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, what amazed me when I saw this movie, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, and I was so touched by the bluegrass music, the gospel bluegrass music, and I said to myself, this really comes from deep in the heart of these people for centuries to be able to sing these songs in this way. And of course, the African-American gospels that have been the heritage of this country and the heritage from Africa, there's something so soulful, and it can arouse you to action, or it can soothe your inner worries, depending on what they choose to sing.
You bring to mind this thought that happened recently, because I did this Middle Eastern peace concert during the Lebanese crisis, when Lebanon was being bombed.
Mm-hmm.
And we had musicians from Iraq and Lebanon and Palestine and Israel performing together songs of peace, right? And their Grace Cathedral was filled. And in the moment of singing about salam and shalom, the Muslim musician reached out his hand to hold the hand of the Israeli musician.
Oh,
and I was in the audience because I wanted to see how people were feeling during it. And you heard everyone choked up all at once. And it was almost like a collective hunger for us to see, even metaphorically through the power of music, the possibility of peace among traditional enemies. And so where the mind can separate with idea differences, something about music can unify to this alignment that you're talking about. And there's nothing that beats it, really.
There's nothing that beats it. And finally, in the workplace, music is becoming more part of the way that people are addressing their workday, whether it's because of too much stress or because people know CEOs have realized that it breaks down barriers and makes for more collective thought. And Shari, you have some thoughts about that too.
I do. This interests me a lot, particularly because my background is both in sociology, music, and in business. And it's very interesting to me that corporations, Toyota is at the forefront of this right now, are bringing in groups to help lead and facilitate drumming between employees at all levels of their organization, from people that are top executives in sales to the person who answers the phone. And this is something that is now worked into their budget, and it's becoming an offering through their HR department. And it's bringing about a way for people to communicate, especially in an era where we have email and there are cubicles and there's so much disconnection between people in these big organizations, to actually have them come together, and people that don't have musical backgrounds necessarily at all, to have all of a sudden within moments of having people connect and form a group energy. It's just something that's intangible, and these companies are realizing that it affects morale, it affects productivity, and it makes people want to show up for work in a different type of way. The other thing I want to say about this, and again, this is sort of coming from a sociology perspective of group behavior, and as music affects group behavior and politics, is you have this whole movement now that started way before my generation in music and politics and activism in the 60s and beyond, you know, before that, the role of music in bringing about change and activism and acting as a central place for people to gather around. So in the 60s, you had that happening a lot here in this country. And now we've seen a resurgence of this happening in this current generation of young people.
Well, what about Woodstock?
Right.
Woody Guthrie long before the Bus Bowl.
Absolutely. It's been going on for a long time. And what I heard about a lot growing up in the 80s was the apathy of young people in politics, especially coming off of the Woodstock generation. Now we have things like Rock the Vote and Bruce Springsteen and other, you know, Bonnie Raitt and other people getting behind politicians that they feel support them and coming out almost as people who care about the world. REM telling their record producers that they will not put their music out in a way that's not environmentally friendly. Biodiesel tours going on because of the amount of waste that's on musical tours. And it's all of a sudden, there's this new upsurge of artists and musicians using their clout as celebrities to really bring about change. And as a result, you have a whole generation of people coming on board with, this can be really fun. How great is it that Michael Franti can have a you know, something in the park, Power to the Peaceful, and have literally tens of thousands of people show up for something around sustainability and peace and justice, but it's all around music and spoken word and the arts. And so it's very hopeful to me that music is still playing that role in our society.
Well, and that's very apropos, and may I say one more thing that I learned from Desmond Tutu, which is, during the Truth and Reconciliation Commissions, there was a verse that Desmond and Nelson asked everyone to say in each household every morning that Angela Sarian told me about. Let us take care of the children, for they have a long way to go. Mm. Let us take care of the elders. They've come a long way, you know. Let us take care of those in between, for they are doing the work. Let us take care of our families, take care of the earth. And so I actually set this to a music. It's a melody. It goes, let us take care of the children, for they have a long way to go. And I won't do this thing at all now because we probably don't have the time. But I sing this in groups now as a way of aligning a common purpose for the evolutionary next steps that will ensure our survival. And we have to sing our way into the kind of world we're looking for. We have to drum our way into the kind of world we're looking for.
Music is definitely a way to show caring and compassion, and certainly that's something that Bread and Roses has stood for a long time. When Mimi Farinha founded it, she and her sister Joan Baez were known as the Peace and Justice Sisters, and I think she really cared about those values, sort of the best values of the 60s. And what's amazing is how much they are, we need to care and show compassion for others now, just as much as back in the 60s, and especially with our highly technology-oriented society.
I love that Joan and Mimi really had it covered. Mimi took care of the internal aspect of individual healing and communities, and Joan took care of the social activism. That's really I didn't realize that they had it covered, didn't they?
It's beautiful. In a way,
yeah.
Well, when I met both of you at Pathways to Peace at an event just a few weeks ago, I was so interested to see how your music, Gary, changed the whole room in minutes. And it was as if your message was every message that Pathways to Peace, who we are a project of, they are our mother organization for the Joan Kenley Show. And it was just stunning for me to see how the words of your music, and Marion, you shared with us about Bread and Roses then, to say that we are all on the same page when it comes to our hope for the world. And by bringing music more to the center, there's going to be a difference beyond language, beyond war, beyond isolation. We can look at being emissaries for music in the world. And I think that's certainly what both of you are doing and what Shari is doing in her other work. And I cannot tell you how full my heart is today to be able to share with our audience just the many, many aspects of music in our lives, in our souls, and in ourselves. So thank you so much for being with us today, Marion and Gary and Shari, and may there be music in the world.
Thank you. Great being here.
Thank you, Joan.
Thank you.
I'd like to say to everyone tuned in, thanks so much for listening. We want you to know that The Joan Kenley Show brings you Conversation Radio, co-created for your listening pleasure with our guests. And we are so grateful to Gary Malkin for much of the music compositions that you've heard throughout the program today. You can find out more about the whole subject of music and its magic on my website, joankenley.com. That's K-E-N-L-E-Y, where all of our shows are archived and downloadable 24/7. And you'll find our podcasts on iTunes. You'll hear more great programs in the next few weeks about the presidential primaries, in-depth democracy issues, activism for peace, and the California Women's Agenda. And huge thanks go to those who made this show possible, Peter B. Collins and Christy Healy, and here in the studio, program producer Havila Capellas, engineer and technical producer Daniel Fletcher. This is Joan Kenley inviting you to tune into our show for more Conversation Radio every Saturday at 5 on Green 960.